We are slowly learning more about the attacks in Chattanooga on members of the U.S. military, which resulted in the death of five. Many are growing in the belief that this attack was a plotted act of domestic terrorism by a follower of radical Islam, while others almost dismiss it as a lone wolf act. This developed as the FBI announced that there are terrorism investigations now being conducted in all 50 states. Here to discuss this increasing concern from the Clarion Project is National Security Analyst, Adjunct Professor of Homeland Security, Ryan Morrow. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And it's clarionproject.org. Learn more about this issue. Ryan, it seems like too many, including the head of the Obama administration, are reluctant to even name, never mind talk about, and that is radical Islamic terrorism.
Right, and the reason that matters is more than just semantics, because that's been the administration's pushback. Is that at the end of the day, what does it really matter whether you call it terrorism or radical Islam? And there are strategic ramifications, and that's because, for example, in Syria, when we're trying to sort good guy from bad guy, if your standard is just no one that's part of a terrorist organization, you might still partner up with someone who is a radical Muslim, yet is not part of a designated terrorist organization. By calling it radical Islam or Islamist extremism, whatever terminology you want, you identify the ideology as the problem, and then strategy and policy follows in that direction.
Well, it seems like, too, that those who are reluctant to name the enemy, which if you don't do that in war, which is what this is, you've lost even before you set your foot on your battlefield. It seems like they almost take the argument away from the problem.
That's true, because you need to stir up a dialogue within the Muslim world and including the Muslim communities here in the United States. And the one in the United States and in Canada is very, very moderate. But what we do need is an ideological battle where these different tenets of radical Islam that create these groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS are debunked, are confronted, are talked about. Whereas right now we're at this politically correct stage where as soon as you start talking about the Islamist ideology, which is when you take the faith of Islam and you turn it into a political doctrine, which is the root of all this, you get called an Islamophobe, an anti-Muslim bigot. They say that you're attacking a religion when you're not. And so to kick off that dialogue, you have to first identify the problem so people start discussing it. And by the way, that conversation is happening in large part in the Muslim world in places like Egypt and Tunisia where they use that terminology. It's only in the United States and Canada where if you use that terminology, you're called a bigot.
Yeah, I believe you actually have Israel and Saudi Arabia teaming up to battle the growth of ISIS. You have David Cameron, who was in Great Britain, the prime minister, long considered extremely liberal, almost beyond maybe what Barack Obama is, stepping up to say we have to battle the ISIS recruitment here in Great Britain.
That's true. The socialists in Europe recognize that there's an ideological problem, and the conversation in Europe is largely about assimilation. So it's not just ideology. They recognize, they've gone past the point where they recognize that radical Islam, or whatever you want to call it, is the problem. But then they say, what are the factors that allow that to have growth? So there's several stages ahead of us in this discussion, and they talk about how the lack of assimilation of different population centers is a problem, because one of the commonalities that we see is that those who are radicalized are not poor, they're not uneducated. Those traditional factors that we associate with crime are not relevant when it comes to Islamic terrorism, but what is relevant is that they don't become part of society. There are these areas of Europe where the population does not identify really as Western. They're hostile to outside law enforcement when they come in. And those are problems that all are contributing factors to radical Islam. So Europe is far more advanced than us, and even many parts of the Muslim world are more advanced than us in discussing this problem.
Talking with Ryan Morrow from the Clarion Project, National Security Analyst, Adjunct Professor of Homeland Security, clarionproject.org is their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And on their website at clarionproject.org, interesting and frightening page, the Islamist Organizations in America. So for those who are thinking, well, this is a problem that's not in my backyard, pick a state, any state, you'll find a recruiting and an indoctrination center, which have great names. For example, the New Jersey chapter of CARE, you have the Norris Center Corporation, Islamic Society of Monmouth County, Islamic Center of Passaic County, where, if I'm recalling correctly, Governor Chris Christie once stood on that stage in that center and praised a defense attorney who was defending suspected terrorists.
Well, what happened there, and this is a good example of the problem, because it's not just about Al-Qaeda and ISIS. It's about nonviolent extremists as well. They create the foundation for the violent extremists. And a great example when it comes to Christie was when he was basically running for governor, needed to get support, and the Islamic Center of Passaic County in Paterson is the largest mosque in the state of New Jersey. It is founded by Hamas members, suspected Hamas members, and the evidence is very strong. And the leader, Imam Kantanani, is a suspected Hamas member who the Department of Homeland Security wants to kick out of the country because he lied on his green card application about how the Israelis had convicted him of being a member of Hamas. And he's also had radical sermons. But because he leads the largest mosque in the state and he was helpful to law enforcement immediately after 9/11 with some things, Christie praised him. And he's praised him over the years, even after he became governor. And that's been a subject of criticism for Christie, to say, how, out of all the Muslim leaders in the state, why is it that Kantanani, the guy who the Department of Homeland Security wants to kick out, why is that the guy that you're calling a friend and putting up on a pedestal?
Exactly. Now, if we turn back to the shooter in Chattanooga, who, again, the naysayers label him as a lone wolf, which my question is, how many lone wolves do you need before you get a pack and a trend? But he apparently had personal problems. He was looking for, I guess, forgiveness of his sins, and he turned to the Quran and interpreted, misinterpreted, reinterpreted, whatever, I guess, to be determined, that martyrdom would lead to the forgiveness that he was seeking.
Well, he's accurately interpreting the interpretation that was given to him. We need to recognize that these aren't psychos who sit at a table, grab a Quran, and say, how can I twist scripture? There are those who will honestly read the Quran and Islamic texts and come away peaceful people, and then there are those that will read it and come away radical. It's about interpretation, and it's not a manipulative practice when this happens. And the media is focusing on the fact that he was depressed, that he was drinking, probably smoked pot. None of those factors really matter too much. There is no connection from an analytical standpoint between Islamic radicalization and drinking or being poor or lack of education or depression or anything like that. In this specific individual's case, it seems likely that his sins and his moral failings led him to say, well, what do I need to do to make up for that sin, to atone for that sin? And what the Islamic State and other groups like them will say is there's only one guaranteed way to get into paradise, where you don't have to tally up your good acts and compare them to your bad acts, which you can never do. There's only one guaranteed way to wipe out everything you've done in the past, and that's to die in jihad. And specifically, the best time to do it is during the holy month of Ramadan, because then your reward in paradise is 10 times greater. And it seems like that's what was motivating this individual. He was struggling with his faith and his past sins, and that allowed radical propaganda to come in, even though it may not have come from the Islamic State, may not have even come from Al-Qaeda, even though he was reading Al-Qaeda-type works. There are doctrines behind all of this, and you don't have to be loyal to a specific group to become radicalized.
So it's almost where if there isn't the moderate voice or the moderate teacher slash guide leading someone through the Quran to say, okay, you think it means this, but no, it means that. This is adding to the situation and to the concerns and creates the Little Rocks, the Fort Hoods, the Boston Marathons.
It can happen one way or the other. It can happen where individuals just kind of read the Quran and Islamic text and have their own independent interpretations. I know some Muslims that came to a moderate interpretation that way, but then had to actually fight with their Islamic religious leaders who were advocating a more radical position. And then in some times it'll happen the other direction, where someone reads it on their own or they read online commentary from a group like Al-Qaeda. They have a radical interpretation, and then the Islamic religious leader says, no, you're going too far with it, and you're incorrect. So there's all sorts of different ways that this can happen, but the bottom line is that there has to be an ideological offensive against these specific interpretations and honestly discusses where they come from, because these are not dumb interpretations. If it was easy to discredit them, they would have been discredited long ago.
As opposed to getting recruit after recruit, and seeing Chattanoogas and Fort Hoods and, God forbid, whatever might or will be coming next as the war will go on. And it is a war, whatever you want to call it. It is a battle, and the Clarion Project brings you the facts and the truth and the realistic view of what is taking place or what needs to take place to turn this from going deeper into the darkness and bring it back into a more civilized world that we, most of us at least, are hoping for. ClarionProject.org is their website. And we've been joined this morning by the National Security Analyst, also an adjunct professor of Homeland Security, Ryan Morrow. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.